Okay, welcome to year 5775. We're in the year of Shemitah. That means that we have many mitzvot. We're very fortunate. I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to call your relatives before Rosh Hashanah, wish them a good year. If you didn't do it, you should do it now. You could still wish them Gemar Chasima Tova before Yom Kippur. Ask them if they realize that this year is Shemitah. And they'll go, huh? All right. But we live it here. Shemitah is relevant to the grass in front of our house. Shemitah is relevant to the fruits and vegetables we're going to be buying in the supermarket. Shemitah is a mitzvah in the Torah that we let the land go fallow and we let anyone pick from the fruit, anyone who pleases can pick from the fruit and vegetables growing in our yards. So what defines whether something is Shemitah produce or not? So with regards to vegetables, we go by when the vegetable was picked. So anyone that has vegetables growing in their yard right now, those vegetables now have the sanctity of Shemitah because they are still growing. By vegetables, we go by when they were picked. What does that mean that something has the sanctity of Shemitah? So it means that we don't harvest it in the standard way. We harvest it in a way that indicates less ownership. We're trying to show that we are not the masters of the land. God said to leave the land fallow, that we should allow everyone to eat from our property. So when we actually do harvest, we do it in a way that's a little different than the way we ordinarily would harvest. It also means that the fruit, there's a mitzvah, according to many opinions. When we eat it, we're actually performing a mitzvah. And the Torah says the fruit of Shemitah were designated for human consumption. Fruit that is edible by humans should be eaten by humans. So a person would not be allowed, for argument's sake, let's say he was doing a play, and it was a comedy. And what he wanted to do in this comedy was, he's supposed to take a banana and mash it on someone's head. If that banana is a Shemitah banana, you're not allowed to destroy that banana. You're not allowed to mash it on someone's head. You're not even allowed to give edible food that's fit for human consumption. You can't give it to animals. You can give animals food that's not fit for human consumption. But for human consumption, the fruits and vegetables that are holy with the holiness of Shemitah, are so long as they're edible by humans, should be eaten by humans. So if you picked a carrot, now that carrot is holy. If you picked it today within Shemitah, it has the holiness of Shemitah. The peel here in Israel, everyone eats the carrot peels. You don't want to eat the carrot peels? So when you peel them, you should put them in a separate bag. Because if you would put them in the regular garbage, then very quickly they're going to get destroyed by other garbage you place there. And you're not supposed to destroy the fruit of Shemitah, the fruits or vegetables of Shemitah. So what we do is we have a special vessel. Some people call it a pach Shemitah or a kli Shemitah or a special bag. When we're going to have leftovers, you're going to eat an apple. You're one of those finicky people who doesn't finish the apple to its core. So there's still parts of the apple that are edible. So you're not going to finish it. You're not supposed to destroy it. You put it in a separate bag. And then after a day or two, you can put it in the garbage once you close it in a bag, because after a day or two, it'll rot on its own inside the garbage. Ordinarily, you wouldn't be able to burn it. You put things in the garbage, they get burnt, but it takes them about 3 or 4 days till they get burnt. You put it in your pail until you take out your pail and put it in the public garbage until the garbage man picks that up and brings it to be burnt. So if you close it up in a bag and you put it in the garbage, that's okay. Why can't I put it in the ordinary garbage? Because if I do, then next time I pour in the rotten food from Shabbos or the rotten milk or whatever I put in the garbage, I will be actively destroying the fruit of Shemitah. So I close it in a bag and then I put it in the garbage and then it gets destroyed, it decomposes on its own. So that's true for all the remnants. So when we say something has the holiness of Shemitah, what does that mean? That means a Jew is supposed to eat it. I'm not supposed to sell it to Chutz Laretz. I'm not supposed to sell it outside Israel. I'm supposed to eat it and not destroy any of it unnecessarily. Can I give children to eat Shemitah fruit? Yes. But when I make Havdalah, if I'm going to use grape juice or wine that's from the Shemitah produce, I'm not going to let that cup overflow over the top because I'm not going to waste that. Where do you put out your Havdalah candle? Put it out in a cup of water. But don't put it out in the grape juice if that grape juice has the holiness of Shemitah. So with regards to vegetables, already now, if you go to the marketplace, you can find vegetables that have the holiness of Shemitah. Next, you're not supposed to sell Shemitah fruit. So how are they selling me vegetables in the marketplace that have the holiness of Shemitah? You're not supposed to do commerce. We said it's supposed to be readily available for free. So we'll get back to that in 1 second. We just have to define one more thing. We what about the fruits? We have in front of our house, we have a tree with some fruits growing on it. Are those fruits holy? So the answer is no. We said vegetables are defined based on when they are picked. But fruits are defined based on when they reach a third of their ripeness, what's called chanata. So if you have in your yard, if you have all kinds of fruits growing, chances are by now your apples have attained a third of their growth. So those apples are not going to have the holiness of Shemitah. What's going to happen? The new apples that grow later in the year and that you'll pick next year. Next year's crop of fruits, or the crop that starts coming out at the end of this year, that's where you have the holiness of Shemitah. So Shemitah is relevant to vegetables now and not fruits. Shemitah starts being relevant to fruits in about a half a year, three quarters of a year from now. In about a half a year, you start having the shesek on the trees ripen. That's where you start having shesek, I don't know what you call that in English. Looks like an apricot, but it's not an apricot. It's an orange fruit that looks like an apricot. What? No. No. It's not a mishmish. It's not a mishmish. It's a shesek. Shesek. I don't know what it's called. Maybe kwokwam, something like that, maybe? Kumquat, yeah? Kumquats, small orange, yeah? Kumquats, okay. So they are the first, really, to ripen. You'll see them around. So that's probably the first fruit you'll encounter that has the holiness of Shemitah. So we said we don't do commerce, we don't take them to Chutz Laretz, and we said that the esrogim, which we'll buy this year, we have to verify whether they were picked before Shemitah or after Shemitah, before Rosh Hashanah or after. Because if they were picked this year, an esrog is treated like a vegetable in many ways. Because an esrog grows differently than fruits, an esrog can stay on a tree and keep taking in water. Esrogim can last sometimes 2 or 3 years on the tree. So they, in certain respects, we don't treat them like a fruit, we treat them like a vegetable. So if you buy an esrog that was picked off the tree in the Shemitah year, so then you can eat that esrog, or you could put it aside, and when it rots on its own, you could throw it out. But you don't. You would have to treat it with that holiness. Okay, you shouldn't take the Chutz Laretz. Okay, so how do we have commerce with Shemitah fruit? We said, you're not supposed to make commerce with Shemitah fruit. So what's going to happen? You have a bunch of orchards in Hebron with grapes. Who's coming with me to pick grapes in Hanukkah? That's when the grapes go ripen. You're going to spend so much money paying gas to go all the way to Hebron to pick, let's say, 15 clusters of grapes and drive back. That's going to cost you a fortune. More than you've saved by getting free grapes. Let's go up to the Golan when it comes time to pick oranges and apples. Let's go picking oranges and apples. It's free. Great. Just the bus ride up to the Golan is 60 shekel and back. What's free about it? I'll go buy it from the Jordanians or whatnot. No. So what happened is that the rabbis saw already in the period of the Second Temple that it was becoming very difficult for the masses to obtain the free fruit and vegetables of Shemitah. So what the rabbis did was, they set up their own system where the courts come in and they say, we take over your field and we are going to distribute your fruits. And the farmer says, great! And the common people say, great! The courts say, but there's going to be cost because we have to hire trucks to drive up and pick up your fruits. We have to hire trucks to bring them back. We have to rent out a space, a selling point where we're going to sell these fruits. If we're going to make grape juice, we have to rent out the grape presses. We have to buy bottles. We have to bottle it. We have to put in sulfates to ensure it doesn't rot. We have our costs. And we have to watch the fields to make sure no one's playing games with the fields, taking the fruits and selling them somewhere else. We have to hire a mashgiach. We have to label the bags so everyone knows what they're buying. So there's a lot of cost involved. So the rabbi said, we're creating something called Otzer Bezdin. The courts will now have storage houses which will supply you with the fruits and vegetables, and you will pay not for the fruit because you're not buying the fruit. We're not allowed to sell you the fruit, right? We said you're not allowed to do commerce with the fruit, but you will pay to cover our cost. So now in many stores you have what's called Otzer Bezdin. Stores will start having, starting tomorrow or the next day, they will have vegetables in bags. Again, fruits it's not relevant for, because the fruits that are growing on our trees are not holy with the holiness of Shemitah. but it is relevant for vegetables. They will have vegetables and they'll be in bags, which should be labeled. And the bags say, this vegetable is somewhere in the range of a kilo, let's say. It doesn't say how much because we don't weigh the vegetable, because then we would be doing commerce with the vegetable. We're not doing commerce. But this bag cost us this much to bring it to the marketplace. You have to pay the makolet this much money, and then you can have this vegetable because you're covering our cost. You're not paying for the vegetable. You're paying for the cost of bringing the vegetable to the marketplace. Sometimes it's cheaper than the regular vegetable. Sometimes it's more expensive. Why? Because the average vegetable gets sold based on supply and demand. If there are more vegetables in the marketplace, the prices go down. If there are less, the prices go up. Otzer Bezdin doesn't work that way. They have a set cost. They closed the prices with the farmers 3 months ago, before they knew how much produce would be in the market today. So sometimes their price is going to be cheaper than the regular price. Sometimes it's going to be more expensive because they're not working based on supply and demand. It's a set price. It's a set price based on their cost. Yes? I'm telling you the way it should be and the way the court that I met with, the way they described they would be doing it this year. I can't tell you what exists throughout the neighborhood here. The one that's called Otsar Haaretz is the one that I think the yeshiva is recommending. And that's the one. That's the way they intend to work this year.
So the country goes commie for like once a year, basically.
1 year and 7 years.
1 year and 7 years
go commie. Is it special this way to eat that specific vegetable? Or?
Well, the advantages of eating Otsar Betin are that you're helping the Jewish farmers maintain their land and not lose out during the year of Shemitah. Because when the courts need to hire someone, let's say, to harvest the fruits, or they need to hire someone to watch the field, they're going to hire the farmer. He knows his patches best. So on many things, they're going to hire him. If it's to do pesticides, to get rid of whatever bugs, they're going to hire him. So by doing Otsar Bezdin, you're helping the Jewish farmers, and you're ensuring that they'll be able to continue working future years as well. So there's a definite benefit from that end in buying Otsar Bezdin. It involves a slight complication where you have to know the stuff you won't eat, your leftovers, you'll put in a separate bag. That's a small price to pay to help the Jewish farmers keep settling the land of Israel. Aside from which, according to Nachmanides, it's mamash a mitzvah. Every time you take a bite of the land, it's a mitzvah.
You know, how the fruit, only vegetables.
Fruits, vegetables, whatever. You're eating the food of the land, you're performing a mitzvah. Yes?
The food that will be not in these bags.
The fruits and vegetables, so there are another three options. One is Yevul Nochri, that they buy it from non-Jews living in Israel. There are non-Jews who have farms as well, be it in Gaza. They have a lot of, they sell us a tremendous amount of produce. So that's called Yevul Nochri. So that's one type of food which you can buy. You have to realize that when you're doing that, most of the time you are supporting people who support terrorism.
But is it labeled as such?
That's what no, it's not labeled as such.
If it's not in Otsar Beitin, then you have no idea whether it's coming from Nochri.
One step at a time. Let's see. So there's Yevul Nochri.
Right.
Well, Yevul Nochri means the produce, the bounty of a non-Jew. That's number one. There are non-Jews that own land in Israel and they farm it and they sell their fruits and vegetables. The whole Palestinian territories, they sell fruits and vegetables into Israel all the time. So that's Yevul Nochri. There's another thing called Yevul Chutzlaretz, food that's brought in from Chutzlaretz. We have part of our peace agreement with the Jordanians is that we will buy a certain amount of vegetables from them every year. So the state of Israel purchases a tremendous quantity of tomatoes from the Jordanians. We purchase a tremendous quantity of vegetables from the Jordanians. So that's another type. Now, that divides up into another issue where if you look at the map... If you go south of Gaza, if you go down, it's south of Beersheba. Okay, there are a few. There's Nachal Besor. It's all the way down here. I'll show you on the map. See down here? So there are three opinions as to where the border of Israel really ends. But everyone agrees that most of the southern tip of Israel does not have the holiness of the land of Israel. And as such, they grow a lot of fruits and vegetables down here. Because this whole southern area was not given the sanctity of the land of Israel. So Shemitah is irrelevant down here. So down here, a lot of fruits and vegetables are actually cultivated in the south. That's why Shemitah is a year of blessing for the farmers of the south, because their produce does not have the holiness of Shemitah. They can sell it easily. Everyone will buy from them. You're buying Jewish produce, and you're buying Jewish produce that does not have the sanctity of Shemitah. Yeah.
Where's like the border?
So there are three opinions. Remind me, please. I'll try to bring tomorrow a map that shows the three opinions where the border is. And so we said that. And then there is something called Heter Mechira we'll get to in 1 second. Yes, Yaakov.
And what is this?
I don't see it from here.
It's like all the way from Iraq to the Sinai.
I have to see it. At the end of class. Remind me after class, I'll take a look, okay?
So that's one way. So what, the one that cuts off in the middle of the Negev, what is that land?
When we entered the land of Israel the first time with Moshe Rabbein, with Yoshua, right? Joshua led us into the land. We sanctified the land of Israel. So that's step one. Then we were exiled and we sanctified it a second time when we returned from Babel. So there's a concept called Ole Mitzrayim, the Jews who came out of Egypt, and there's Ole Babel, the Jews that came out of Babylon. Now, this is going to be a little bit long. We shouldn't go on to this tangent. We'll have a class on the maps if you want. Maybe Thursday night we'll discuss it, okay?
Did we sanctify it again in 48 or
not? No. So we're working off of the sanctity of Ole Babel, the Jews that came out of Babylon.
Why are we not re-sanctifying it? Is it because like Haredim said that like, we don't recognize it as sanctification?
Tell you what. I'm willing to answer that question after you learn the Mishnah in Shavuos, which describes how you sanctify the land. You learn the Mishnah, I'll answer the question. If you still have a question after you learn the Mishnah.
I'll find it.
Learn the whole book.
Which chapter?
Shavuos or Shavuos?
Shavuos. Shavuos and Nezikin. If you still have a question after you learned the Mishnah, then I'll be happy to address it. Let's see if I can find it.
Didn't Rambam say the same to the left when we were exiled by Romans?
So, you guys want a long class, huh? Okay. I have to look for it. I don't remember.
You can't run that down?
We're already on a tangent for 45 minutes. We didn't get to our real class yet. So, right, but I'm trying to give you what's relevant to you for this year, not a full-length class on Shemitah. Give me one second. This was not a planned class. Let's cover what you need to know for Shemitah. There's a final thing which you have to know, and that's something called Heter Mechira. Many, many centuries ago, the Jews in Israel ran into this issue that Shemitah was coming, and it was very dangerous for them because they didn't see a way out. They didn't see how they would stay in the land if they can't work it and what they're going to live off of. So many centuries ago, they invented a concept called Heter Mechira, where they sell the land to a non-Jew for the year or the 2 years of Shemitah and the year following Shemitah. And then during that time, if it's owned by a non-Jew, so then either a Jew or a non-Jew works the land. When the Jews came back to Israel, in the time of the Gra, and then later in the time of Rav Kook, there was a big question whether they could do Heter Mechira. So no one liked it. Everyone said it's a bad idea. The question was, in light of the facts, do we have a better option? Do we have a choice? And after much deliberation, Rav Kook, who did not like it, Rav Kook, who actually was very, very stringent in the laws of Shemitah, Rav Kook decided, after deliberating with many rabbis, and many rabbis disagreed that he should have done it. This became a very central point of contention. But at the end of the day, Rav Kook gave a ruling that they should do the Heter Mechira because they have no choice. Even Rav Kook agreed it was a bad option. But Rav Kook felt that in light of the circumstances and the situation, they have to permit it. He had some rabbis that went with him and many great rabbis who came out against him. The rabbis who disagreed did not disagree that it works. Most of them agreed that it works or that you could say what he said. They didn't agree to say it. They didn't agree that the situation warranted doing this leniency or that there were aspects of the leniency they didn't like. You're not supposed to sell the land of Israel to non-Jews. You know, so here you are on Shemitah selling the land away to non-Jews. There's a special mitzvah to acquire the land and not to allow the land to be in the hands of non-Jews. And Rav Kook put together many different angles to try and permit it. The driving point was the fear that they didn't have a choice. The issue has resurfaced in the last few decades. Every Shemitah this year, there's actually less noise about it than previous years. But for many years, many cycles, this has been a huge point of contention where many rabbis said it's no longer necessary. You can't apply it. Even Rav Kook wouldn't apply it today because today we have other ways out. And other rabbis saying, no, the harm it would cause to the state of Israel if you did not do the Heter Mechira is astronomic. So that's another point of argument. But at the end of the day, when you go to the shuk, if you're buying in a fruit or vegetable stand and it has the regular Rabbanut Hechsher, so there's a high probability that at least some of the fruits and vegetables, or at this point of the year vegetables, later on in the year fruits, will be from Heter Mechira. And again, that's something which some rabbis will say it's a very important thing because it helps the agriculture stay in the land of Israel. Other rabbis argue and say, no, even Rav Kook today wouldn't have agreed to do this leniency.
Is
and
kosher for us as the consumer, though?
Yeah. I'll tell you what Rav Moshe Feinstein said. He said that even though he doesn't agree with it, you have to respect those who do it. Meaning he said, obviously there's a strong opinion that permits it. You know, sometimes you disagree with someone and you say, this opinion is not a legitimate opinion. Sometimes you disagree and you say, you're entitled to go with that opinion. I don't agree with it, but it's still a legitimate opinion. So that's what Rabbi Feinstein said. That's what Rav Mordechai Eliyahu is quoted as having said, that he doesn't agree that it should be done, but he definitely holds that whoever does it can rely on it. It's not... What? So it's land that was owned by Jewish farmers, and for the year of Shemitah, or the year plus, they sell it to a non-Jew. Now, one of the great benefits of the Heter Mechira, what?
What's the big difference between Otsar Din and Heter Mechira? I understand
that. Heter Mechira, Otsar Beit Din is, we don't work the land on Shemitah. All we're doing is collecting the fruit on Shemitah and protecting the fruit to some degree and distributing the fruit. And that's Otsar Beit Din that's done by the court. Heter Mechira is the land is sold to a non-Jew. It's not our land. And then either a Jew or a non-Jew works the land and grows things in the land and then sells you the fruit.
Technically, it's not the same?
Not at all.
Wait a minute. One part is the land, the agricultural land that belongs to a Jew. In the Shemitah year, he sells it to a non-Jew, right? And then he works on it, right?
Either he or other people.
Oh, they work. Okay. And on third thing, then he basically he doesn't get money for the for it, right? But he gets money for administering the produce, right?
Right, but the actions which he does with the field are more limited. He's not planting, and B, he's not giving up ownership of the field. The whole heter mechira of selling the land to a non-Jew has many issues. One is, are you allowed to sell to a non-Jew? Two is, do you really intend to sell it, and does he really intend to buy it? Saying those are two major issues here. Ask the average guy up in the Golan or anywhere else who's growing fruits and vegetables. He loves his land. Tell him, this land isn't yours this year. Do you understand that? Is that really what he's thinking? And does the non-Jew really feel like it's his? Again, I'm saying some of the claims against it. There are many issues, but if you'll say, no, of course I sold it to him, and it's his. The question is, are you allowed to sell land in Israel to a non-Jew? So those are two of the issues.
And when was it instituted?
So again, centuries ago, about 600 years ago, they did this for the first time. And then when we came back to the land of Israel, About 100 years ago, it was started again.
Well, I had time here. I was done 600 years ago.
Yeah.
By who?
By the rabbis who were here then.
Was it like...
Just a second. Yes, Yaakov.
Trying to differentiate between... We seem to be putting emphasis on the person who owns the land as opposed to the fruit in and of itself. So if we're saying the fruit in and of itself, during a Shemitah year, that's Kedusha, then it shouldn't matter who owns the land, who works the land. It's the fruit in and of itself that's our focus.
That's a good point. It happens to be Machlokas, the Mabit, and the Beis Yosef. Do we say that fruit that grows in a non-Jew's property in the land of Israel is that holy? Two opinions. And here in Jerusalem, the custom is to be lenient, to assume that fruit that grows in non-Jewish ownership is not holy.
But we're saying the connection is the fruit to the land. So what does ownership have to do with it?
I guess...
Because you could then extrapolate, say, whatever property a non-Jew owns in Israel... That part of that, look, Kedusha, it's not Eretz Israel. Because that's what we're basically saying. Ownership transfers. And therefore, wherever a non-Jew owns a plot of land, that part of that land is not Eretz Israel. That's no Kedusha.
You're assuming that all holiness is equal. And you're assuming that... if my ownership of the land makes it that certain mitzvos are not relevant, then the whole holiness of the land of Israel is not relevant. I don't think it works that way. I think the holiness of the land can be dependent on two factors. The holiness of the land can be dependent on governmental ownership. It can be, is it a Jewish state here or not? You can say, when the Jews are here, so that gives them the possibility of imparting the holiness on the land. We have people to do the mitzvos, etc. You can say that the land was given sanctity back in the days of Joshua, in the days of the Second Temple, and then that sanctity remains to some effect. Will it be to the point where the fruits also have the mitzvos? So that, just like if a non-Jew makes bread, so there's no mitzvah of taking off challah. If you buy dough from a non-Jew, you don't have to take off challah because it was made into dough in his ownership. The mitzvah of challah is only relevant when I make dough, when I put together flour and water, or when any Jew puts together flour and water. So if the fruit grows in the land, so long as it's under his ownership, it could be the land has the holiness of the land of Israel with regards to being Eretz Yisrael. But the holiness of the fruit, to be obligated in the mitzvah, let's take Trumos and Maestros when it comes to tithing. If a non-Jew harvests his field, there's no mitzvah of Peah, there's no mitzvah of Trumos and Maestros. Why? Because it's in his ownership, it's his fruits. The mitzvah is not relevant to those fruits in his ownership. He'll sell it to me, I don't have that mitzvah anymore. The fruits never had the mitzvah. So, you're right, that the land is still holy, it's still the land of Israel. But this idea of the mitzvah being relevant in territory that's not owned by a Jew, to fruits that are not owned by a Jew, sometimes we don't say that.
Okay, but does the land in and of itself have sanctity without any Jews being there? Let's say the land was no Jews in Israel whatsoever.
We assume yes. We assume that the land maintained its holiness throughout. Okay. But again, that needs a broader discussion. Is it biblical? Is it rabbinic? Until when will it be rabbinic? The way demographics are working, we can have the majority of the Jews here, probably by the next Shemitah cycle, if not the next one, the following one. So, but we're not divided into territories. Okay, that's its own discussion.
You were saying, though, that if the oats are baked in, you'll see that bag clearly
later. Should be.
Okay, if we go to the shuk or the mini market down the street, are they going to have three separate sections saying Nopri down from the south of Israel? How are we?
I think you have to look at the kashrus. When you enter to buy fruits and vegetables, right, starting now for another 3 years, for the next 3 years, because I was in the shuk 2 years after Shemitah, and I bought citrus fruits. I don't remember which fruits. And as we were leaving the stand, My wife said to me, there's a lot of fine print on that kashrus. Did you read it? I said, no, I didn't see it. And I went back to the sign, and I start reading the fine print, and it had a good kashrus. I saw it was the rabbinate of Jerusalem, Mehadrin, and then on the bottom it said, some of the fruits might be from the year of Shemitah. Ask your local Orthodox rabbi whether you may eat them or not. That's the kashrus. You know, 2 years after Shemitah, the fine print says, ask your local Orthodox rabbi whether you may eat them or not. And that's Mehadrin. I was blown away. I called the Mashgiach, and he started asking me, which fruits did you buy? And it turned out that the fruits I bought had the holiness of Shemitah. There's another law of Shemitah we didn't go into, which is relevant to what happens 2 years later. Okay, you guys want to spend more time on this? I mean, this is at the expense of a regular class. How many people want us to continue on Shemitah?
Are we going to do the Jewish law?
Okay, we'll continue on Shemitah.
Okay,
so just a second. No, we'll touch on that. Okay, so until now what we've discussed is, let's summarize. In the year of Shemitah, with regards to vegetables, from today onward, every vegetable that's picked has the holiness of Shemitah. And that means that we don't put it to waste, we don't give it to a non-Jew, we don't send it to Chutz Lartz, it remains in the land of Israel. Next, with regard to fruit, we said it goes by when the fruit reached a third of its ripeness. Most fruits you're going to buy for the next half a year have already reached a third of their ripeness before the Shemitah year, and as such, they do not have the holiness of Shemitah. In the year of Shemitah, now, starting today, you have different options in the store. We said one option is Otzar Bezdin. Otzar Bezdin has holiness of Shemitah. The company Otzar Haaretz doesn't only sell Otzar Bezdin. They also sell fruit from the Arava, from the south, that have no holiness but are produced by Jews. We said there's Yevul Nochri, produce that's grown by a non-Jew in the land of Israel, and that we, our custom in Jerusalem, we treat that as though it's not holy. And then there's also Yevul Chutz Laretz, food that's brought from Chutz Laretz, which can be from any place. It can be from Jordan, it could be from Holland, it could be Holland Dutch peppers. So that also has no holiness. We said there's Heter Mechira. Revolving around Heter Mechira, there was and still is a lot of controversy. It's become a huge, highly charged political debate, instead of remaining only a halachic debate. But at the end of the day, there are opinions that permit it. I think for Machon Meir students, you guys don't have to worry about it. You could eat it and enjoy it. You have strong halachic opinions you can rely on. Just like I say, Heter Mechira. But you do have to check the kashrus wherever you purchase to see what you're buying. Are you buying Heter Mechira? Are you buying other things? You should be aware, if you're going to someone for a Shabbos meal, that many people do not eat Heter Mechira. You should not purchase for them wine from Heter Mechira or fruit and vegetables from Heter Mechira. Or if you go to the bakery and they're going to sell you fresh apple pie from Heter Mechira, unless you're certain that the person is comfortable with it. There are many people, including people in this yeshiva, who do not eat Heter Mechira. So Heter Mechira is a leniency which, again, is centuries old, was reinstated by Rav Kook in the beginning of this century, and till today there's controversy around it. But for you guys, I would rely on it at this stage of the game. It's hard enough. You don't have a home. You don't have a family. You have to make it on Bein HaZmanim on your own. That's not something I would be stringent on at this stage of the game. God willing, later on, you'll build your family. By next Shemitah, we'll talk about it again. But you should take into account that your hosts are not necessarily comfortable with it. Some people don't know that much, or they feel very strongly against it, and they would feel like they can't even touch it. Like, that's like, don't bring that into my house. It's a little extreme, but that you should be considerate of it. Yes? The Rabbanut does Heter Mechira for many, many fields across the country. I don't know. Could be there are private Rabbanim around the country who do too. What I know is the Rabbanut does it. Yes.
Okay, and the others, Mehadrin, but that's their...
They will not do Heter Mechira.
Okay, so that's what we can look for as well.
Right. Other Kashruyot, the Badatzim, will not touch a Heter Mechira. Correct. Yes?
How would you tell the wine?
It says it on the label. Usually it'll say it on the label.
So does it always say it and I just never looked for it?
It didn't say it because it wasn't relevant till this year. It'll only be relevant in a year and a half. In a year and a half. Because it's the grapes that will start growing now, be harvested next year, made into wine I'm saying it only becomes relevant in 2 or 3 years.
And then it's going to be labeled special.
And then if you look at the kashrus, usually next to the kashrus, it'll say, Otzer Bezner Heter Mechira. I'm saying there are wines, there are companies that do it. Yes?
The only one that we can't throw away the apple cores and things like this, or for that first option.
Otzer Bezden.
So in this example...
Or if you picked it off your own yard, right?
So in the example when you accidentally or almost bought fruit with your wife 3 years later, all you had to do was just not throw away these parts of the fruit, and it would
right.
be okay, right?
Right. I didn't explain one more point. That's what I asked if you guys want to go on. There's one more point to explain, which will be relevant at the end of the year, but we'll get to that in a second. Yeah?
What's the deal with the majority you're talking about? Like the majority of Jews live in Israel?
Oh, so there's a holiness to the land. Right now, we treat most of the mitzvos as rabbinic. The mitzvah of Shemitah, Trumos, Maestros, that's rabbinic. If the majority of the people of Israel were living in the land of Israel, and according to some commentaries, they would also have to be divided into their tribes, meaning they'd have to know where they belong. But if the majority were living here, then we run into a question of whether all the mitzvahs become biblical. Then it's more severe. The final point we have to discuss is a concept called biur. The Torah says, with regards to the fruits and vegetables of Shemitah, it says, make it available to anyone who wants to eat it and to the animals of the field. Leave your fields open. If animals come in and eat it, it should be available to them as well. So from there, the rabbis derived that so long as there's food available out in the fields, you may hold on to food in your homes. Once the food becomes scarce in the fields, you may not hold on to it in your homes. Meaning, when the apple crop finishes, when there are no more apples left on the trees, so then you can't hold on to apples in your own home. Finish whatever apples you have, you can have 3 meals worth, and then you got to leave the rest outside for whoever wants. The animals, the people, you could go out and say, whoever wants can have it. That's what's called biur, the time when you have to get rid of any extras that you have in your home. So when it comes to biur, so think about it. If you have fruits, vegetables, grape juice of Shemitah, there comes a time in the year where you're not supposed to hold on to it anymore, where there's nothing left on the tree. That's called Shasa Biur, the time of Biur. There are opinions, and this is the custom here in Israel, that it's enough to take it outside. People often buy a lot of grape juice from Otzer Bezdin because it's much cheaper. Remember, you're paying for the work. You're not paying for the grapes. So the Otzer Bezdin grape juice and wine comes at a cost that's much cheaper, about 30% cheaper than the regular grape juice. So people sometimes buy 100 bottles of grape juice. They figure, for a year I have grape juice. On 100 bottles, you save 300 shekel. Think about it. You can buy 8 shekel a bottle instead of 11 or 12 shekel a bottle. That's a big savings. Yes?
I don't know if that's the time. Is there going to be an announcement?
Oh, so... Right. So there are charts. There are charts, and there are books that have charts. There's a very nice book by Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon in English as well on Shemitah. So there are charts that tell you when each fruit is the Zman Biur, when is the time that you have to get it out. Now, in Israel, the custom is to go with the opinion that you can take all those crates of grape juice, go outside into a public place with 3 people there, and say, Hefker, Hefker, Hefker. It's for whoever wants it. And you wait. If anyone takes some, they take some. And if not, you take it back home. You did yours. You made it available to everyone. And now you can take it back home. Maimonides does not agree with that opinion. But Maimonides' opinion is not what was accepted in the land of Israel. The Chazon Ish, who gave many leniencies in the laws of Shemitah, gave this one as well. There we go with the Rash's opinion. Rash is an acronym. And so that's the custom. And sometimes you'll see, you'll be walking around and you'll see in that season, towards Pesach next year, you'll see people taking out crates of grape juice, waiting till there are like only 3 people around, then going, Hefker, Hefker, it says in the Jerusalem Talmud, wait until the end of market day, till you start hearing only pitter-patter of people's feet, that the whole ruckus is gone, that there are only a few people left in the market, then take it out and say Hefker. So the Jerusalem Talmud says to do that. It's not a bad idea. I remember seeing someone do it with maybe 80 or 100 bottles of grape juice. He had about 15 boxes. Each box has like 6 bottles in it. And he took them all outside and he said, Hefker, Hefker, Hefker. He called me. He said, I want to make sure that 3D later. He said, Hefker. So I said, really? Can I take a box home? He said, sure. I just said it's Hefker. I went to take a box and I wanted to see the look on his face. He didn't say a word. I took it, I started walking, I didn't say a word, then I put it back. No, I didn't do it to tease him. I did it because of the halachic aspect. Did he really mean it? If he's saying it's Hefker, it has to be Hefker. So I saw that he really meant it. I said, fine, yeah, you said Hefker, goodbye, enjoy. Can I help you bring it back home? Help them carry it back
if
home.
If you get wine like that, do you have to do that again yourself?
No.
The loss, that's Kedusha of Shvi'is?
No, it retains its Kedusha of Shvi'is. It retains its Kedusha. Now, let's say you have an Esrog of Shvi'is, and you make the mistake, you sell it to your friend. Your friend sees your Esrog and says, wow, that's a great Esrog. Can I buy that off you? And you make the mistake of selling it to him. So then what happens is the money has the sanctity of Shvi'is. The money and the Esrog. The Esrog doesn't lose it and the money gets it. That's why it's so important that with Otzer Bezdin, we're not buying the fruits. We're paying for the labor. We're not paying for the fruits. The fruits, the vegetables, whatever it is. Okay, so that's Shemitah in a nutshell for the layman. We did a basic crash course in Shemitah. You'll buy food and eat it with the holiness of Shemitah. Yeah.
But does the money keep it?
No, if you buy food with it. So
what makes it, so all you need to do with it at that point is buy other Shemitah things?
Other food. Right. Food, so fruit, a vegetable.
That money has to be used to buy vegetables or fruit.
Right. But you shouldn't do that. I'm saying Chazal didn't want us to do commerce with, the Torah didn't want us to do commerce with Shemitah fruits. Okay.
So,
we're done? Yeah.
If you're walking the field on Shemitah year, okay, and you're walking up north, you see an apple like grove, can you walk in and assume that now this is Shemitah and you can eat their apple?
You don't know if they did Heter Mechira, you don't know who owns it.
Because of the halacha is designed, like the Torah is designed so people can do what I'm describing.
You're right, 100%. But now that we have Heter Mechira and Otzer Bezdin, so it, in that sense, we've lost that. You want to go and pick someone's fruit, you don't know. Maybe it's owned by a non-Jew this year.
So, okay, it's owned by a non-Jew. You shouldn't be living in our country.
Okay, so that's a different question. Are you allowed to do that in his field? That's,
there are also some farmers who don't teach
that well. It's also true, so that's a separate decision.